people have makaros in these booklets? Yeah, okay. I tried hard to get as much as possible into the makarot. There are a number of psukim not on the makarot, which I'll reference, and people can write down the sources, etc., the basics on the makarot sheets themselves. So first of all, it gives me a great pleasure to be able to be here. I'm here because of the Hertzbergs. I just landed a few hours ago, and I'm here for a wedding of Adam Hertzberg from Queens. I understand his rabbi, Rabbi Penner, is going to be speaking after me. So maybe the day is in honor of the chassan. I'm getting married later today. I want to speak about the date of Chanukah, which I think is indicative of the roots of Chanukah that people may not necessarily be aware of. Last year I was here on Chanukah too, and I spoke about how Chanukah was understood after the event by Chazal, and what aspects they highlighted for us as far as what we're meant to learn from Chanukah. This year I want to move back in time and understand Chanukah in light of the events that preceded it and the history in the earlier time periods. And I think a very good way of seeing the link between Chanukah and these earlier time periods is through the date of Chanukah itself. If you take a look at the first source, the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, the Gemara, of course, in its famous discussion revolving around Maya Chanukah, quotes the segment from Megillat Ta'anit, work from Bayit Sheni, which recorded the different days of the year when miracles had happened, when they celebrated as Yamim Tovim. So the Gemara is quoting that source, and it speaks about how on Chaf Hei Kislev we have the 8 days of Chanukah, when we don't have Hespedim, when we don't fast, because of the story of what happened with the Greeks, the magical oil. The Gemara concludes that later on, Kfa'um Va'asa'um Yamim Tovim Bahalal Vogda. Subsequent years, these days were set up as Yamim Tovim that are expressed through Halal and Hodah, which was actually what I spoke about last year. Below you see the quote at length from Megillat Ta'anit, which speaks about the events that occurred that time, which led to the setting up of Chanukah. So one could say that the date of Chav Hei Kislev is coincidental with what happens to have happened that year, meaning they won the war in the days before Chav Hei Kislev, and Chav Hei Kislev, which was right after the victory, they were able to set up shop in the Beit Mikdash properly, and that's when the miracle of the oil happened. That's assumably the simple answer. If you were asked, why do we celebrate Chanukah on Chav Hei Kislev, you would say, because that's when it came out. But it seems that this answer is insufficient. First of all, because it seems very clear that the Jews had taken over the Har HaBayit way before Chav Hei Kislev. How do we know this? If you look at the same Megillat Ta'anit, it talks about the 23rd of Mar Cheshvan and the 3rd of Kislev as dates when the Chashmonaim removed Avodah Zarah from the Har HaBayis, from the Mizbeach, from the Har HaBayis in general. I'm not getting into the particular events that are described there. And these dates are obviously before Chav Hei Kislev, which means that they had already taken control of the Har HaBayit beforehand. So why was it that the special events that happened on Chanukah, the Yom Tov of Chanukah, is connected particularly to Chav Hei Kislev? I think the answer is that, and we'll soon see it inside, that they did win the war beforehand, and right away they removed Avodah Zarah from the Har HaBayit, and they began purifying and preparing the Har HaBayit to function the way it ought to be functioning. But they intentionally delayed the Chanukat HaBayit till Chav Hei Kislev. That suggestion is written beferish in Sefer Chashmonoyim, right? Tasmanians, the book we have from that time, where it describes at length the process of rebuilding the Har HaBayit in the Kelim. And it says in Pasuk Nun Aleph, Vayihi b'yom ha-chamishi ve'esrim l'chodesh ha-tshi'i hu Kislev, בשנת שמונה וארבעים ומאה, to the Greeks, וישכימו בבוקר ויעלו עולות על מזבח החדש כמשפט, ויחנכו את המזבח בעצם היום אשר תימו אותו הגויים. ויעללו להשם בשירים וכנרות, צלילים ומצלצלים, etc., etc. They intended to re-sanctify the Har HaBayit on the day when the Goyim, the Greeks, the Mityavnim, whoever they were, had defiled it. So now we're a little bit closer to the answer. Why Chav Hei Kislev? Because that's the day it had been defiled. And they wanted to re-sanctify it on the day it had been defiled. But of course the question just moves a step further. Was there any significance to the day when it had been defiled? It was just coincidental. The Goyim happened to have defiled it on Chav Hei Kislev, and so the Jews wanted to reverse that. If it was truly coincidental, then we wonder, why was the date so significant? That was the day they destroyed it, so this is the day we have to rebuild it. Because they make it significant. We have it significant. It's in some form of Nittelnacht or something, 25th, right? They make it significant, so we make it significant. What I'd like to show you is that the significance of this date goes back to the beginning of Bayit Sheni. According to Chazal and the Medrash, it goes back already to the Mishkan. According to Chazal, the day when the Jews completed developing all the Kalim for the Mishkan was Chafei Kislev. Of course, the Torah tells us beferish that it was put up for the first time when? Chodesh Nisan. Chazal say it was completed Chafei Kislev. Okay, but that's in the Medrash. It's beferish in the Pesukim, though, that this date has significance in the beginning of Bayit Sheni. Well, we first prove the significance, then explain the significance of the date, and then understand how this helps us better understand what was going on Hanukkah. So in order for us to proceed with this, let's take a look at page 2. I'm assuming that it's typeset as I gave it over. Ot bet, hareka, bereshit, yimei bayit sheni. So if we have differences in the sheets, let me know, okay? All right. If you take a look at Sefer Chagai, everyone's familiar, of course, with Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. The three Nevi'im in Treyasar who are during Bayit Sheni, Chazal called them the Achronei HaNevi'im. There were also other Nevi'im during Bayit Sheni. Who else? Ezra Nehemiah. I'm sorry? Ezra Nehemiah, right. Did you say, I didn't hear someone else? Oh, Ezra. Okay. Ezra and Nehemiah were definitely very important people in Bayit Sheni. Important Jewish leaders, right? Whether that constitutes as a Navi, won't get into. But in any case, these are the Nevi'im who were there in the beginning of Bayit Sheni. And there's a lot to learn from them, a lot of very important things. If you look here in Chagai, Perek Bet, he has Nevuot that were given to him on Esrim Ve'arba Latshi'i. That's, of course, Chof Dalet Kislev. Yom, if you look at Pasuk Yudchet, Lemin hayom asher yusad heichal Hashem. The day when the foundations for the heichal Hashem were completed. The Rishonim explain, and we'll prove this as we move along, that they finished the foundations on the 24th. Foundations, which means the building on the foundations began on the 25th. And the day before they moved from the foundations to the building, Hashem had certain messages he wanted to give across to the Jewish people. So this date is laden already from the beginning of Bayit Sheni. And in order to understand the laden significance, we need to appreciate what was going on then. What were the expectations, the hopes? To what extent were they realized? And I think once we understand this, we can see Hanukkah in its proper perspective and understand how the Chashmonaim saw themselves in light of the history of Bayit Sheni and why this date was so significant. So again, the date is the link. What we're more interested in beyond the date is how people saw themselves. Okay, so let's begin with Sefer Yirmiyah, Perek Chaf Gimel. We're, of course, familiar with the Churban that happened about 70 years before the period we're talking about, the beginning of Bayit Sheni. And already at the time of the Churban, Yirmiyah goes with them to Galut and reassures them that Hashem will be bringing the Jewish people back. Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Hey, Hine Yamim Baim Num Hashem, Vakimoti LeDavid Semach Tzadik, Umalach Melech v'hiskil v'yasa mishpat u'tzdaka v'aretz. The true sign of the kings of David is tzdaka u'mishpat, which of course goes back to where? Where's the first time we find these terms mentioned together? By Avram, right? Hashem has to tell him about stone because he knows that he's going to be teaching his children the ways of tzdaka u'mishpat. Avram is the contrast to stone. He meets Malki Tzedek as opposed to Melech Stone. Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, eventually to be Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a city that's supposed to be rooted in Tzedakah and Mishpat. This is what Malchut Beit David stands for, supposed to stand for, first with David and then with Shlomo. And Yirmiyah says that Hashem will bring back this Malchut with its Mishpat and Tzedakah. B'yamav Tivasheh Yehuda v'Yisrael Yishkon Levetach v'zeh Shmo Asher Yekru Hashem Tzedkenu. And they'll see it as a way of seeing that God Himself is righteous. Lachain Pasuk Zayin. Hine yamim ba'im nu Hashem, v'lo yomru od chay Hashem asher hela et bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, ki im chay Hashem asher hela v'asher hevi et zera beit Yisrael me'eretz tzafonu mikol haratzot asher hidachtim sham v'yashvu al admatam. Most people are familiar with this pasuk from the Gemara in Brachot, but it's actually a pasuk which says that the Geula will be so great that it'll eclipse Yitziat Mitzrayim and the first round of coming to Eretz Yisrael, it'll be so great. In fact, Haggai in Perek Bet tells the people who are longing for Bayit Rishon, famous pasuk we're all familiar with, Gadol Yeh Kvod HaBayit Hazem in a Rishon, right? The greatness of the Bayit Sheni will be greater than that of Bayit Rishon. Of course, and this is a pasuk that is not on the sheet, Yirmiyah mentions later, Perek Chavtet, pasuk Yudin, and onward, that all this depends, of course, on the Jewish people doing tshuva. But as opposed to the 70-year period when, even if they did tshuva, they could not return, there was a gzera that they needed to go into galut. At the end of the 70 years, he says, Perek Chavtet, pasuk Yud, Ki cho amar Hashem, ki lefim la'ot levavel shivim shana efkod etchem, v'akim moti alichem et dvari hatov la'shiv etchem el ha'makom hazeh. Ki anochi yadati et ha'machshavot asher anochi choshev alichem ne'um Hashem. I know what I really want for the Jewish people. Machshavot shalom v'lo l'ra'a latet lechem achrit v'tikva. I want to give you peace. I want to give you a future. I want to give you an end of hope. U'kiratim oti, and you will call me at that point after the 70 years. V'alachtem v'itpalaltem elai v'shamati alechem. U'vikashtem oti u'matzatem. Here he's paraphrasing the parsha of tshuva in the Torah and Sefer Devarim. You'll seek me and you will find me then. Ki tidrashuni b'chol levavchem, when you seek me with your full heart. ונמצאתי לכם נאום השם, ושבתי את שבותכם, וקיבלתי אתכם מכל הגויים ומכל המקומות אשר הדחתי אתכם שם נאום השם. Yirmiyah told them that after these 70 years, assuming there'd be tshuva, the people would be brought back, and God's true intentions for the Jewish people, peace, success, tranquility, prosperity, would reign. Okay, so how does this begin to fulfill itself? We read in the beginning of Sefer Ezra, the third source on page 2, of course, the first year of Koresh, Melech Paras, famous Cyrus decree. He made a decree, the Navi attributes it to Yirmiyah's influence. He let it be known in writing, Pasuk Bet. By the way, we have a record of this historically. There are historical evidence of this decree. It's not just in the Navi. Kom Ar Koresh, Melech Paras. כל ממלכות הארץ נתן לי השם עמקי השמיים והוא פקד עליי לבנות לו בית בירושלים אשר ביהודה. God has given me power, reign over all the lands, and he's told me to rebuild the Beit Mikdash. מי בכם מכל עמו יהי אלוהיו עמו ויעל ירושלים אשר ביהודה. Whatever the Jewish people is spirited to do, this should go up. ויבן את בית השם אלוקי ישראל הוא אלוהים אשר בירושלים. What about the others? פסק דלת. וכל הנשאר מכל המקומות אשר הוא גר שם. ינשאוהו אנשי מקומו בכסף ובזהב וברכוש ובבהמה מן הנדבה לבית אלוהים אשר בירושלים. What should the rest of the people do, those who don't go up to build it? They'll give donations. Here we see. First, the UJA, Koresh is saying, those who go will go, and those left behind will support them. ויקומו פסקי ראשי האבות ליהודה ובנימין והכהנים והלוויים לכל העיר האלוהים את רוחו לעלות לבנות את בית השם אשר בירושלים. People went. פסק ו' וכל סביבותיהם חזקו בידיהם בכלי כסף, בזהב, ברכוש, בבהמה ובמגדנות, לבד על כל הנדב. And the people who stayed supported. והמלך קורש הציא, what was Koresh's contribution? את כלי בית השם אשר הוציא נבוכדנצר מירושלים, ויתנם בבית אלוהיו. ויוציאם קורש מלך פרס על ידי מטרדות הגזבר, that was the name of the person in charge, ויספרם לשבצר, הנשיא ליהודה, etc. He gave them over to the people going to Yehuda, he gave them back. The Klei Mikdash, which obviously were very significant, particularly if you're familiar with the debates about the Klei Mikdash in Sefer Yirmiyah, as symbolic of the Jewish people's own Geula process. Blank stares. Just briefly, you're familiar, I'm sure, with the fact that before the eventual Churban, earlier, in time of Yehoyachin, was the first stage of the Galus of Bavel, when Nebuchadnezzar took them into Galus, right? And he took the best people of Israel with the Klei HaMikdash, with the golden Klei HaMikdash. The Mikdash had golden kelim and copper kelim, the Choshet. So he took the leaders with the golden kelim. And then a debate raged amongst the Jewish people. Was this the beginning of the end? Or a passing episode and everything was going to continue well? What did Yirmiyah say? He said, this is the beginning of the end. And just like the Klei Zav are gone, the Klei Nechoshet are going to be gone also. Forget it. Until God brings us back. And there were Nevi'e Sheker. Anyone remembers any of the names? Hananya ben Azur. Nevi'e Sheker, who was saying, the Kelim are going to be brought back. people should know this because it's the source of a Gemara. It's not just Tanakh, which is also know. It's the source of a Gemara. The Gemara says, how do we know that you know if someone's a Navi Sheker if he gives a prophecy and it becomes and it doesn't show to be true? Because Hananya ben Azur said, within 2 years the Kelim are going to come back. So Yirmiyah responded, he said, if a person predicts good, if a person predicts for Am Yisrael bad, as the Gemara explains, and if it doesn't happen, then he's a Navi Sheker and we'll see who's lying. And Yirmiyah said, all the Kelim are going. I think this is very important because it's the backdrop to the Maisa Merkava. When the Maisa Merkava is described by Yechezkel, leaving Yerushalayim, it's described as being copper, looking like copper. Or Korach HaShmal, Nechoshet, because it was symbolic of the rest of the Kelim, the Klei Nechoshet that are going. The Kelim were indicative, were a symbol of the fate of the Jewish people. Golus or Geula. The Gemara in Ksuvos, right? The Gemara in Ksuvos says that Rav Zera was avoiding his Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda held it was an Isser to go to Eretz Yisrael, right? What pasuk does the Gemara quote? V'yom pokdi otam, right? Until the day that I bring the Jewish people back, they have to stay in Bavel. What's that pasuk referring to? The Kelim. That's Rav Zera's answer. He says, Ahu b'chei shareis k'siv. That's talking about the Kelim, not about us. And Rabbi Yehuda understands the Kelim are indicative of the fate of the Jewish people. Okay, all that in passing, getting back to the point, the return of the Kelim is a sign that the Jewish people, it's time for them to return. And everything's open for them, and they're ready to go. So, when they returned here in Ezra, Perek Aleph, by the way, this was not Ezra himself who returned. Ezra only comes in Perek Zion, say for Ezra. But when the people went back, whoever it was in the beginning, it was Zerubbabel, you know the names, Yeshua ben Yehotzadok, how'd it go? Did it go well? It didn't go very well. It didn't go very well at all. It didn't go well in Gashmias, and it didn't go well in Ruchnias. Let's begin with the Gashmias. The person who was the head of the kingdom of the Jews, what was his title? If you look at the bottom of page 2, his name was, I just mentioned, Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. What was his title? He was called Pchat Yehuda, which is roughly, I think incorrectly translated, as governor of Judah. What does the word Pchat mean? Less. Meaning he wasn't really in charge. He was an appointed official under Koresh. So are the Jews running their own country? They're like the 51st state of Persia. Right? Meaning it wasn't up to them. It's also mentioned in Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis, and we'll soon see, the situation economically was dire, was unlivable. It was terrible. We'll soon see the Nevuot at length. How about the goal, which was to rebuild the Beis Hashem? Was that goal realized? No. If you take a look in Ezra Perek Gimel, now we're talking about stage 1. Ezra Perek Gimel. What did they build? Top of page 3. They built the Mizbeach. Why didn't they build the Beis Hashem? So it mentions both in Pasuk Gimel and then in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, that the people who were living there made their lives miserable. If it sounds familiar at all. Both politically and personally, the Shomronim, right, the people who had been moved into the Shomron, their leader was, anyone remembers? Remembers, assumes we've learned these from Sanballat, right? So he was, they stopped from building the Beis Hashem because the people there knew what building the Beis Hashem meant for Jewish identity and would replace, of course, their Beis Hashem, which was in Shechem, right? So they did not want this, and they did a lot of things to keep them from being able to rebuild it. In any case, the situation was not good from any perspective. And then comes round 2. When does round 2 happen? Well, Koresh is deposed. His empire is taken over by Darius. And now there's a reinvigoration of the attempt to rebuild Eretz Yisrael and to build the Beis Hashem. There's a new Aliyah of people. This is when Ezra makes Aliyah. Haggai and Zechariah describe this period. It's 18 years later when now they're going to try and rebuild Beis Hashem. Just to keep in mind context, there are 2 70-year periods. There's 70 years from the first galus of the leaders of the Jewish people in the time of Yehoyachin to the first return in the time of Koresh. And then there's 70 years from the final Churban to the rebuilding of the Mikdash. So there's 2 70-year periods, they overlap of course, 70 years of Golus, 70 years of Churban HaMikdash. In any case, the Jews are coming back to rebuild the Beis Hashem. And this occurs in the second year of Dariavish's reign. Both Haggai and Zechariah, Nevi'im from that time, speak at length about this period. Let's begin in the beginning of Sefer Haggai. Bishnat Shtayim L'Dariavish HaMelech. B'Chodesh HaShishi B'Yom Echad L'Chodesh. What do we call this day? Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rosh Chodesh Elul. Interesting, auspicious time for this. Hayad Var Hashem Biyad Chagai Anavi El Zerubbabel Ben Shaltiel Pchat Yehuda Vel Yehoshua Ben Yehotzadak HaKohen HaGadol Neymar. On Rosh Chodesh Elul, they got together for opening Musa Shmuz for Elul, and in walks Chagai, and he says, I have words of God for everyone. And who are the two leaders sitting up in the front? Zerubbabel, who's the political leader, Pchat Yehuda, and Yehoshua, who's the Kohen HaGadol. Spiritual leadership, the political leadership. And what does Chagai have to say? Koh amar Hashem tzvaot leimor. Ha'am hazeh amru. These people have been saying, lo eit, bo eit beit Hashem lihibanot. They're saying it's not the time. The time has not come for what? For building the Beit Mikdash. The people were saying after 18 years of failure, they're saying, look, it's not time to build the Beit Mikdash. It's reishit smichat gulatenu. I don't know, whatever they were saying, right? Meaning things aren't going well yet, we have to wait. You could also justify it as, when did they build in the time of Bayit Rishon? Only once. The kingship was fortified, right? David built the empire, then everything was peaceful, and then Shlomo built the Beit Mikdash. So maybe there was a similar svar. I don't think the people saying this were bad. They assume, even though we were sent back to build the Beit Hashem, and that was the whole decree, and that's what God wanted, it's not exactly what needs to happen right now. So Hashem says to them, "Hayi dvar Hashem biyad Chagai anavi lemor." Ha'et lochem atem l'shevet bevateichem svunim v'habayit hazecharev. It's interesting the play on words he makes. It's not the time to build a Beit Hashem. Is it the time for you to sit in your comfortable homes? That's his answer. While the Beit Mikdash is charev, and of course it reminds you a lot of whose words? Use the exact same terminology. David HaMelech. What inspired David HaMelech to build the Beit Mikdash? He says, how could I sit here in my paneled home and the Aaron is sitting in a tent? I have to build the Beit Mikdash. And here Hashem is telling this to David's descendants. V'yata ko amar Hashem tzvot, simu levavchem al darchechem. Reflect on your ways. What is he referring to? Shcholish elo, pasuk vav. Zeratem harbei v'havei ma'at. You plant a lot, but how much do you bring in? A little. Achol v'ein l'savo. You eat, but you're not satisfied. Shato v'ein l'shachra. You drink, but you can't become shikr. Lavosh v'ein l'chomlo. You put on clothing, but you're not warm. You're not secure. V'amistaker, and someone who makes money, mistaker el tzeror nekuv. The money is made into a hold pocket, or a hold kli. You've ever felt this way? You have a lot of kids at home, you have a lot of expenses. No matter how much you make, it just seems like it's not there. And what he's trying to say is, you're putting in all this effort, and you're trying to develop the country, and it's just not working. Did you ever wonder why? Says Hashem, Ko amar Hashem tzvot simu levavchem al darchechem. This is the refrain. Alu ahar vavetem eitz. Go up to the mountain and bring wood. Uvnu habayit. And build the Beit Mikdash. Veretzebo veikaved amar veikavda amar Hashem. And I'll want it and I'll be honored by it. Pano al harbei v'inei lemat. Vevesem habayit v'nafachti bo. You've looked for a lot and received a little. You've built yourselves homes and I've blown them away. Why? Yan men Hashem tzvot, yan beiti asher hu charev v'atem ratzim yish lebeito. Because my house is destroyed and you're all running to your own homes. Al kein aleichem kalu shamayim mital v'aretz kala yivula. That's why there's no dew and there's no wheat. Ve'ekra chorev al aretz v'al arim v'al adagan v'al tirosh v'al yitzar v'al shetotzi adama v'al adam v'abeima v'al kol yigia kapam. And I put my curse on this land. What other than Hashem is saying, you were brought back to build the Beit Mikdash. That's how everything is going to succeed here. If you don't do that, everything fails. That's why everything's failing. If you want to succeed back here in Eretz Israel, you have to rebuild the Beit Mikdash. That simple. When was this Nevuah stated? Rosh Chodesh Elul. I skipped the rest of the parak here, but if you look in Sefer Haggai, it says the people were inspired. Zerubbabel and Yehoshua, and they went out and they started collecting the materials. How long do you think it might have taken them then to collect the materials? About 3 months. Yom Tov Moshe Elul, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud. Now we see it in context. Be'esrim ve'arba le'tshi'i b'shnat sh'tayim l'daryavish. Haya dvar Hashem b'yad Chagai hanavi le'mor. Ko amar Hashem tzvot sh'alna l'konim, etc., etc. They're ready to build the Beit Mikdash. We saw how this day was described back on page 2, later in Perek Bet. If you want to remind your Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Chet, it's called the Yom Yusad Heichal Hashem. And basically, on this auspicious day, when they're starting to actually build it, after collecting and preparing for it, Hashem reminds them through Chagai what he had said before. If you rebuild the Beit Mikdash, you'll succeed. And they begin building. There's another Navi who's prophesizing at exactly the same time as Chagai, and that's Zechariah. The second year of Daryavish, as they're rebuilding, and he has a message that's parallel and I think completes, complementary to what Chagai has to say. If you look at the bottom of page 3, Bachodesh Hashmini Bishnat Shtayim L'Daryavish. What's that? Cheshvan, right in between. Haya Dvar Hashem al Zechariah ben Berechia ben Ido Anavi Lemor. Katzaf Hashem al Avoteichem Katzaf. Hashem was angry at your ancestors. V'amarta Alehem, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvot. Shuvu Eilayinum Hashem Tzvot V'ashuv Alechem Amar Hashem Tzvot. What Zechariah says is, if you want to succeed here, you have to repair what your forefathers did wrong, and that was, they weren't serving God. That's why he was angry at them. Make sure to return to Hashem. Pasuk Dalet. Al tiyuka avotechem asher karu alehem anavim arishonim leimor. Ko amar Hashem tzvot shuv mina midachem haraim imalechem haraim velo shamu velo ekshivu elayinu Hashem. Don't be like your ancestors who didn't heed the word of the Nevi'im to do tshuva. Avotechem ayehem v'hanevi'im haleolam yichyu. Interesting phrase for the last of the Nevi'im. Where are your forefathers today? And will the Nevi'im be here forever to ask you to do tshuva? אַх דבריי וחוקיי אשר ציוויתי את עבדי הנביאים הלא השיגו אבותיכם וישובו ויאמרו כאשר זמם השם לעשות לעשות לנו כדרכנו כמלנו כן עשה איתנו. See that God punished them for what they did wrong and now do tshuva. And it continues in Perek Bet with the Haftorah that we read on Shabbat Chanukah. So important that even if it's Rosh Chodesh, like yesterday, we read this Haftorah anyway. Rani ושמחי בת ציון כי הנני בא ושכנתי בתוכך נאום השם. Be happy, city of Zion, because I'm returning, my Shekhinah is returning to you. Continuation on page 4. V'nilvu goyim rabim el Hashem v'yomahu v'hayu li la'an v'shachanti b'tochech v'yadata ki Hashem tzva'ot shlachani elayich. You'll know that I've been sent by God. V'nachal Hashem et Yehudah chalko al admat ha'kodesh u'vachar od b'Yerushalayim. God will be choosing Yerushalayim again. Haskol v'asar m'tnei Hashem ki ne'or mimon kodesho. And he continues, Zechariah spends 6 prakim describing how the Shekhinah is going to return to Yerushalayim if the people do tshuva. And when is he giving these prophecies? It's not mentioned here, but if you're reading Chagai, you know that this is as they are rebuilding the Beit Mikdash, which is going to be a symbol of the Shekhinah's return. And then, of course, we have the climactic vision of the menorah, right, which we read yesterday in Perek Dalet, where the Malach says to him, what do you see? And he says, I see a menorat zahav with bowls on top of it. And what's next to it on both sides, Pesach Gimel? 2 olive branches. And I said to the Malach, Pesach Dalet, what is this supposed to mean? Pesach Hey. Vayan ha-malach ha-dover bi vayomer elai. Halo yadata ma-hei ma-eila. You know what this means. Va-omar lo adoni. I said, no, I don't know what it means. Vayan vayomer elai. And he answered me and said, Zed var Hashem el Zerubbabel le'mor. This is the word of Hashem to Zerubbabel, lo v'chayo v'lo v'koach ki'im v'ruchi amar Hashem tzvot. So everyone knows this message, and it's a beautiful concept, that it's not going to be only through economics and through politics and through military strength, it's going to be v'ruach Hashem. The obvious question here is, how does that come out of the mashal of the menorah? It's exactly what Zechariah didn't understand. I see a menorah with olive branches. Okay, what is that supposed to mean to me? It's supposed to mean lo v'chayol v'lo v'koach ki'im v'ruchi amar Hashem tzvot. And the Rishonim struggle here to figure out how does one connect to the other. And what's interesting is that the Malach expects him to know what it means, even though he doesn't. We'll get back to this, but to summarize, they're rebuilding the Beit Hashem. The Yom Yasad or Yusad Beit Hashem, the ready is Chaf Dalet moving into Chaf HaKislev. At this time, Chagai and Zechariah come and they say, two messages, Chagai and Zechariah. Rebuilding the Beit Mikdash is what Hashem expects in order to help you succeed physically in this land, Chagai, and in order to rebuild the relationship with you spiritually, Zechariah. And so now, everyone's really hopeful that things are going to work. Well, did they? Round two of Bayit Sheni. No. When Ezra comes to the city, he finds that they're intermarried. And they don't keep anything. And they've lost their way totally. Again, this is exactly what Chagai and Zechariah were coming to tell them. Just rebuilding the Beit Mikdash in and of itself isn't enough. It has to be accompanied by a process of tshuva. The people did not respond properly. The Gemara has some damning comments about this. Really scary ones. If you look at page 4, Gemara tells a story, of course, hundreds of years later about Reish Lakish, who lived where? Eretz Yisrael in the Galil. Important for this story, Eretz Yisrael. Havisachi b'Yarden, he was swimming in the Jordan River. Aser Rabba bar Barchana, who lived in Bavel, the other side. Yav le'yada, he offered him a hand to take him out of the river. Amarle, Reish Lakish said to Rabba Barchana, Eloh senina lechu, God hates you. So I don't want to take your hand. Tichtiv im chomahi nivnei alei atirat kesef v'im delati natsur alei luach erez. It's a pasuk from Chagai, talking about Bayit Sheni. Im asitem atzmechem kechoma. Had you come up together, all the Jewish people made aliyah, ve'alitem kulchem bimei Ezra, nimshaltem kekesef shein rekef sholet bo. You would have been like silver that doesn't rot. Achshav shalitem kidlatot. You came up weakly like doors. Nimshaltem keerez sharekef sholet bo. Or in other words, the Gemara is saying is that this potential for Bayit Sheni, that it could have been forever and eternal, didn't happen because the Jews didn't return in mass to Eretz Yisrael. The obvious question here in the Gemara is, okay, so the Jews blew an opportunity. Why is God angry? Rashi explains that by the Jews not coming up, Imei Ezra, Manu Shechina Milavo Milashuv Lishrot B'Bayit Sheni. This kept the Shechina from coming back, as Zechariah told us. Based on the pasuk in Bamidbar, the end of Sefer Bamidbar, when it says in the context of Ari Miklat, making sure not to allow the land to be defiled by murder, it says, pasuk Lamed Dalet, V'lo tetamei et ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim ba, asher ani shochein betocha, ki ani Hashem shochein betoch b'nei Yisrael. The Shechina is in Eretz Yisrael because the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael. So if we're not there, the Shechina is not there, and that's why God is angry at us for not having come back and not having allowed it to succeed. The Kuzari, of course, is successful at convincing the king of the validity of Judaism as opposed to Christianity and Islam. And then the Kuzari king says to him, so if you have it all figured out, aren't you violating your own mitzvot by not returning to Eretz Yisrael? So the Chavar answers him, Achein matzata makom cherpati melech Kuzar. You have found the place of my embarrassment. Ki amnam chet zehu asher biglalo lo nitkayem hayiud asher ya'ad ha'elo ala Bayit Sheni. This is the reason why the destiny that God set for Bayit Sheni was not fulfilled. Roni v'simchi bat zion ki nani va v'shachanti b'tochech meum Hashem. Kuzari nu Tanach. This was the goal. And why didn't it happen? Because the people didn't return. God's presence was going to be like in Bayit Rishon. Ilu nenu kulam lekriya v'shavu l'eretz Yisrael b'nefesh chafetza. Had they all come back with a desiring heart. Aval rak mitzatam nenu. V'rubam v'chashuvim shebehem nisharu b'bavel maskimim l'galut. They stayed behind in Bavel as if to imply that they accepted and were happy with galut. As long as they didn't have to leave their homes and their businesses. This is what Shlomo means when he says, because the galus can put you to sleep and cause you to just accept living where you're living as what should be forever. And this is why Bayit Sheni did not reach its potential. If you look at the top of page 5, he says, fourth line, Af Anu, says the Kuzari about himself in his own times, Ilu Hayinu Muchanim Litkarev Elohe Avotenu Belevav Shalem. If we would draw close to our God with a full heart, Ki Az Hayahu Yitbarach Moshienu Kasher Hoshiat Avotenu B'Mitzrayim. But Achshav She'en Adavar Kein, Ein Hadvarim She'anu Omrim B'Tfilatenu. The things we say in our davening, Hishtachavu Lahar Kacho, V'Hishtachavu La'adom Maglav, V'Amachzir Shechinato L'Tzion V'Chadome, all these things we say, are Kiyim Kidibur Hatuki. It's like a parrot speaking. Uketzifzuf Azarzir, just repeating after and rote, Kibalo Kavanat Halev Anu Omrim Dvarim Elu Odomehem. That's really sharp for the Kuzari to see the parallel between his own days and the time of Bayit Sheni. This nevuah waiting to be fulfilled, waiting for the Jewish people to be ready. And of course, the Kuzari wasn't just someone who was Na'ad Doresh. He was Na'am Kayim, Rav Yehuda HaLevi, made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael at a time where it was much harder than Bayit Sheni or today. And it's important to note that people like Rav Yehuda HaLevi, the Ramban, Rav Yosef Ishu Rishalayim, the Rishonim who began returning, and people with them, in the 11th century, 12th century, 13th century, is really the beginnings of what we call Zionism, or what we should call Zionism. Unfortunately, there are people who have an agenda in writing the history of Zionism who begin it in the end of the 19th century. They really very, you can see a sharp line that continues from Yehuda HaLevi and Ban through the Shalah, even before you get to the Gra and the Baal Shem Tov, and eventually to the three Rabbanim who began the Zionist movement in the middle of the 19th century. Do we know their names? Of Kalisher, of Alkali, of Guttenmacher a little bit later, and others. Unfortunately, their flocks did not follow, and eventually was taken over by non-religious people. But it's interesting to see the Kuzari reflecting on this. Now, even though the Kuzari says, based on the Gemara, that the reason Bayit Sheni didn't reach its destiny is because the Jewish people didn't return en masse, I think there's a second facet which is true here as well. And that is that the people in Israel didn't live up to what they were meant to live up to. They didn't do the tshuva that Zechariah said needed to come along with rebuilding the Beit Mikdash. Why do I think this? Because if the lesson was for B'nai Chutzlar, it's why are Chagai and Zechariah talking to the people in Israel? They should go back to Babel and say, if you want this to succeed, you have to move. It's clear that there were expectations from the people in Israel as well that were not met. Because of this dual lack of tshuva, tshuva in the Torah and in Tanakh includes, it's one component that has two facets. Tshuva means returning to God. Returning to God means the way you live your life, but also where you live your life. And that's why when it says in the Parsha of Tshuva in Dvarim Perek Lamed that you should do tshuva, Vashevote el levavecha v'shavtem an Hashem elokecha. How does Hashem answer that? V'shav Hashem elokecha shvutcha v'richamecha v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim. God shows the completion of the tshuva process by returning you physically to His land, to Eretz Yisrael. So there's really one component of showing one's complete interest in living and returning to God by living in Israel properly. So these hopes were unrealized. All these, this excitement in the beginning of Bayit Sheni. Now we can understand the significance of this date, both for those who were defiling the Beit Mikdash and for the Chashmonaim who were rebuilding the Beit Mikdash. It's very clear that the Chashmonaim saw themselves as realizing these in abeyance hopes for Bayit Sheni. And if it's not clear to us, it was clear to Rashi. If you look on page 5, Rashi on Sefer Chagai Perek Bet Pasuk Vav, regarding the prophecies there about how Hashem is going to turn over the world in recreating Bayit Sheni, Rashi interprets this as referring to the Nisim that would happen to the Chashmonaim. Now this is a very strange interpretation because clearly Chagai and Zechariah are speaking to their people, not to hundreds of years later. So what's Pshat? Pshat is very simple. They were speaking to their people. And it could have and would have happened then. Why didn't it happen then? Because nobody said Mila Shem Elai and nobody followed. So the Nevuah that should have happened in the beginning of Bayit Sheni ended up happening when? Is this what Chagai and Zechariah were referring to? Yes and no. They were referring to these things happening now. But they didn't happen now. They happened a lot later. If you look later in the same parak in Chagai, of the Nevuah, the second Nevuah given to him on the 24th of the month, Tell me if what this sounds like to you. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Emor el zru bavel pchat yudal emor. Ani marish et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz. I'm going to shake the world. Ve'afachti kisei mamlechot. I'm going to flip over the chairs of kings. Ve'shmadati chozek mamlechot ha-goyim. Ve'afachti merkava ve'ruchvel. I'm going to throw off chariots and their riders. Ve'yordu susim ve'ruchvehem ish becherev achiv. They're going to fight with each other. The Nevuah is that this will happen to Zerubbabel. Did it ever happen to Zerubbabel? No. But it happened a little bit later to the Chashmonaim. It could have happened then. It happened only when the Jews were ready for it. The Rambam, of course, we're all familiar with in the beginning of Hilchot Chanukah, defines the significance of the Nes of Chanukah that Chazra Malchus Li Yisrael Yeter Al Matayim Shana Ada Churban Hasheni. The Jewish people had the kingship back for more than 200 years. Weren't there kings before the Chashmonaim? They weren't kings, they were Pchat. You see here again from the Rambam the significance of Jewish sovereignty in your own land. That's how the Rambam defines the climax of the Nes of Chanukah. They achieved sovereignty, independence, economic success, but also with the spiritual side to it. How do we know that there was a spiritual side to it? So of course, what Chazal stressed for us from the story of Chanukah were not the military victories, but the Nes of the Pach Shemen, and whether that's independent or something meant to define the significance of the military victories. Clearly, the Pach Shemen is indicative, is symbolic of Jewish people's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Chaf Bet, not on the sheet, tells us that it was a nes that happened with the menorah every day, described by the Torah as the ner tamid, that the westernmost candle would had the same amount of oil as the others, and it was lit first, and all the others were lit from it, yet it outlasted all the other nerot and lasted a full day and night. What was the point of this nes? Says the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Chaf Bet, Amud Bet. Eidu ti levae olam. It was a testimony to the people of the world, Shashchina Sharabi Yisrael, that the Shechina resides amongst the Jewish people. This was a nes that had symbolized the relationship between God and the Jewish people way before Chanukah. But it stopped when the Greeks extinguished the belief in this relationship from the Jewish people, and it returned on Chanukah. It symbolized the Hashrat Hashchina. Now I have one question. How did the Chashmonaim, how did Chazal know that this was the significance of the menorah? Who told them? Sorry? Zechariah. Remember the prophecy we saw back in Chagai and Zechariah. And Zechariah is coming to talk about the spiritual significance of the rebuilding of Bayit Sheni. And the Shechina is going to return. And then the Malach shows him this vision of the menorah with the Atzei Zayit on the side, right? The olive oil. And he says, what do you see? As if he expects him to understand. He goes, I don't understand. He goes, this symbolizes that. It's not going to be out of strength. Lo v'chayol v'lo v'koach ki'im. Do you think this was understood fully? To Zerubbabel? To Yerushua ben Yehotzadak? I don't think so. But when it happened to the Chashmonaim later, this prophecy they knew about. They were waiting for the realization of this prophecy. And here it is. And they understood what it meant for them. They understood that their ascension to the power, to the control of Israel, wasn't just about a political victory. And its significance wasn't just that the Jewish people now have sovereignty in their own land. But it was because it indicated that the Shekhinah had returned and was there, and that now Bayit Sheni had the potential to realize itself. What they had been waiting for. Does it surprise us that they waited for the 25th of Kislev, Yom Yusad Heichal Hashem, to celebrate this Yom Tov with what it meant to them? Let's fast forward to our days. So the Chashmonaim saw in themselves the realization of the prophecies that had been lingering from the beginning of Bayit Sheni. Were they right? Well, they're definitely, from Hashem's side, he was saying, here we are. Well, did it happen? Did they succeed? Not at all. Those who know the history of the Chashmonaim know how quickly things disintegrated into the types of kings that were worse even than the kings in Bayit Rishon. Shechter likes to bring a proof from the nature of the Jewish kings in Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni that Jewish sovereignty is significant in and of itself, irrespective of how evil the kings are. You should know, the Hashmonaic kings make Ehud Olmert look like one of the Chasidei Umas Ha'olam, one of the Tzadikei Ador. You read the stories of what went on then. Terrible, terrible things, if people know a little bit of history. That's why, for example, Yanai HaMelech is talked about in the Gemara. What does the Gemara say Yanai HaMelech did? Killed all the rabbis. That's pretty bad. Now, keep in mind, it's surprising because the Hashmonaim were very firm people. How could it be the grandson wants to kill all the rabbis? Anyone who knows the history of American Jews, Jews coming over to America can understand that very well. But in any case, things disintegrated very, very quickly for the Hashmonaim. And one can say, as the Kuzari believed, that the prophecies are waiting. In our own times, there are Jews who believe that they are the fulfillment of this prophecy. Which Jews are these? The Jews who decided that the symbol for the state of Israel is menorah with two olive branches. We don't learn Tanakh, but they do. The message of that was very simple. The Jews' return to Israel is not just about physical power and sovereignty. If that's all it was, we could go to Uganda. It's about lo v'chayel v'lo v'koch ki'im beruchi. It's about the ruach of what we're about. And you should know in Israel there's a very big stress placed on ruach, on anshei haruach. Who are anshei haruach in Israel? Academics, arts, music, literature. Anshei haruach, as opposed to anshei mada. B.A. Anshei HaRuach. And on Hanukkah, there's a lot of celebration and discussion of Jewish culture. Because it's about the Ruach, about the culture. Strange thing to think about today. But when the state was formed, there was an understanding that it was more than just Uganda. It was a way to revive Jewish culture, which for them means Ruach. Today, things are better and worse in Israel. They're worse because most secular Israelis do not believe in the concept of Jewish culture. They're better because most secular Israelis do not believe in the concept of Jewish culture. It's better because at least there isn't confusion anymore as to what Judaism means. It's worse because people think Judaism doesn't mean anything. It's prophetic. It's min hashamayim. That Israel has embedded within its identity the sense of lo v'chayel v'lo v'koach ki'im beruchi, and anyone who wants to explain the symbol of the state of Israel is going to have to deal with that prophecy. And society awaits people who can come and define what the culture of the Jewish people as their own people in their own land means. And who better than we? If you talk about what the state of Israel needs. I heard Rav Shechter say a few years ago and many times since, the state of Israel needs why you people to make Aliyah. I think what he means by this is people who have a sense of what Judaism stands for but can translate it into the world. A few hours ago, I don't remember how many, a sleeping pill and a flight away, I was with Yeshivat HaKotel in Eilat for Shabbat. All the yeshiva give off for Hanukkah weekend, so we Thursday, Friday took the Tiulim, and Shabbat we were in Eilat, and Matzah Shabbos. Quickly drove my family back, very quickly, dropped them off, got an airplane, yeah, okay, etc. And the boys were asking, what are we doing in Eilat? In Shabbat Hanukkah. I said, it's a very simple explanation. The Hashmonaim failed to be kings because they were Kohanim. As the Ramban says, their chait was, Kohanim are not supposed to be kings, Shevet Yehuda is supposed to be kings. I'll explain to you why. My kids and I, we went to the IMAX film in Eilat. I don't know if anyone even have an IMAX there. Imagine if the Hashmonaim would have been approached with the idea for an IMAX. You want to translate into your own world today? Take five people from Mei Sharm and make them in charge of the country. The budget, the military, the welfare, the... So they would have said, listen, Matis, yo, we want to do this 3D thing. We said, 3D? Let's make this 3D. If you have a country that doesn't have 3D, if you have a country that doesn't have banana boats, I'm just thinking about the last few days, You need a place where people can also have a vacation in a proper atmosphere. To build a country, you need to build all aspects of what the country is. The Chashmonaim were very pious people. It seems like they did not do a very good job running the country, and their grandchildren believed, like many children of American Jewish immigrants, that the biggest enemy of running the country properly were the rabbis. Many of the early Zionists saw the rabbis and religion as keeping them from rebuilding the state. They may have been right about some of the rabbis. It shouldn't surprise us at all that the grandchildren of the Chashmonaim wanted to kill all the rabbis. The question is to be able to have this purity, this sense of Ruach Hashem, but to be able to translate it in a practical way. So the date of Chaf Hei Kislev is a date that begins in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, according to Chazal already in the time of the Mishkan, but in the text itself, in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, it bears within it the hopes for the potential of the return of the Jewish people. A return that will be greater than the first time. The return of the Shechina, the re-choosing of Yerushalayim. And the Chashmonaim clearly saw themselves as the opportunity to accomplish this. And Chazal, by reading the Haftorah of this Shabbat, tell us that that's what it was meant to be. But it didn't happen. And now the Jewish people, 2,000 years later, return under the same symbol of this same prophecy. Imagine if you lived 100, 200, 300, 400 years ago. What opportunities did you have to be part of the history of the Jewish people? Today, we have the opportunity, which has to scare us a little bit, because we have to wonder if we're making sure to make the most of it, as the Kuzari applied to himself. My point is not to come here and say everybody should make Aliyah. It's not my point. My point is for us to understand what does the Jewish people needs to be the direction, which isn't just the Jewish people's return to Israel, but bringing with them and infusing properly the spirit. You walk around Israel today, I was in Eilat, as I mentioned, Hanukkah. Most of the people are Israeli. They're not foreign tourists. Some of the hotels still have Christmas trees, Shtaganach, right? But nobody's by them. There are hundreds of people lighting Ner Rosh Hanukkah in the hotels. Israelis have beautiful homes. People have relatives, friends, you go, you can see beautiful homes in Israel. Does it not sting to hear the words of Haggai Navi? Lo eit ba, eit bnot beis Hashem. And Hashem's response, is it not the time to rebuild the Beit Mikdash when you are protected in your own homes? So my point is not that we should be rebuilding the Beit Mikdash. I do think we should want the rebuilding of the Beit Mikdash. I do think that we have to take more seriously our tefillot that are about how without the Beit Mikdash our lives are incomplete. Rachem, Nachem, Hashem Elokeinu Alamcha Yisrael, Yerushalayim Yirecha Atzion Mishkan Kvodecha. Not the Beit Mikdash as a place. The Harabayit as a place, as a political entity. But what these things stand for, that the return is significant because it's a chance to rebond with the Shechina. Lo v'chayol v'lo v'koach ki'im baruchi nu Hashem. And to infuse what we're zocheh to be experiencing today with the correct spirit. Chanukah Sameach.
Maybe I should write a tag in. We'll take a 2-minute break. We'll start again.